Hi, and welcome to Visual Necessary, a study of permanent podcast series on the NDIS. Brought to you by the Summer Foundation. I'm your host, Dr. George Telephorus, and on today's episode, we're talking about unregistered providers. But before we go any further, please do me a favor and hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, and select the notification bell so you can be notified of future episodes. Did you know that NDIS participants spend overall about 60% of our funding on unregistered providers? And this number is growing. Yep, unregistered providers are a very important part of the NDIS market. So why are more and more of us turning to unregistered providers for our support? And what can we do to stay safe? Let's find out. Hi, Helen, Nick, and Jared. Welcome to Visual Necessary. I'd love it if you could introduce yourselves. Helen, can I start with you?
Hi, George. So I'm Helen Dickinson. I'm a Professor of Public Service Research at UNSW in Canberra. And much of my research focuses on the policy and practice around the disability space.
Great to have you here. Nick.
Hi, George. I'm Nick Avery. I'm an NDIS participant and parent of two young adults who are also NDIS participants and self-manage all three plans. I'm also CEO of SWAN, which is a small disabled persons organisation in regional WA.
Welcome. And Jared.
Hi, George. I am a senior peer worker at an organisation called CEDA. And we are an organisation of peers and people with disabilities who do peer support. I'm also a disability activist, and I would just like to mention that I'm coming to you from the stolen lands of the Darkinjan people. I'd like to pay my respects to them.
Welcome, Jared. Great to have you all on the show. Helen, can I start with you? How did you become interested in unregistered providers?
So, I mean, I'm really interested in quality and safety of services, particularly in the disability space. And obviously we've seen through the Royal Commission some, you know, awful and very common kind of incidences of abuse and neglect. And around the middle of last year, there were some calls to say, well, maybe some of this problem is because we use unregistered providers and that registration would sort some of this out. And I didn't really think that that was necessarily the case. And then there was a report that came out in the middle of last year from Per Capita, which was about digital platforms and their use in the NDIS, but it conflated a lot of issues in there and made some, what I thought were some fairly inaccurate statements about registration and about that being a guarantee of quality and safety. And so this research really came out of anger, to be honest, George. I was quite pissed off by some of the debate that was happening around that, because it wasn't my experience, it's not the experience of many NDIS participants who I spoke to. And then also, you know, the conversation was between policymakers and public servants and academics, and people with disability weren't having a voice within that discussion. And so with my colleagues Sophie Yates and Raylene West, we decided to do a project where we spoke to people with disability and said, well, you know, you tell us, why do you use unregistered providers, and what do you think, if there are any considerations around that in terms of quality and safety?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you took that up. I was also quite angry, and what made me angry was, like you said, it was really the voice of everyone but people with disabilities, everyone but NDIS participants, and clearly, you know, they and us, we are the ones who are most important when it comes to what quality looks like. So can you tell us about the research itself and the methodology and who you interviewed?
Yeah, so the first thing I'll say, George, is this is the quickest project I've ever recruited interviewees for. So we put out a call on social media and through some advocacy groups who we work with. We wanted to speak to 30 people who were either NDIS participants and then a smaller number of plan nominees and sometimes both. And we wanted to get a good range across the country in different sorts of regions and different backgrounds. And we filled those interview slots in less than 24 hours and had a big waiting list of people who wanted to speak to us. So that told us that there were some people out there who were also being frustrated in this conversation. And so we did interviews over Zoom and Teams. With people everywhere around Australia, apart from the Northern Territory. We didn't have anybody from there, where we kind of asked people, why do you use unregistered providers? George, your feedback was very helpful for us in our early development of the interviews, because you told us we should be asking people why they don't use registered providers as well. So we did that. And then what people do to make sure that they get quality and safe services. So what sort of steps do people take to make sure that they're safe?
I think that's really interesting that you said that you had all those participants within 24 hours. Having done research myself, I know how hard it can be to get participants. So, yeah, and as someone who took part in your research, I was really eager to get involved. So it just shows that, you know, if you're doing research that matters to people, you're going to get some good responses. So let's hear a bit about your findings. So can you maybe give us a bit of an idea of what were the key themes or the key messages that people in your study were saying?
Yeah, so I guess first of all, it's kind of important that this, you know, the debate between registered or unregistered is not very nuanced in many different ways. But firstly, because people buy different types of services and supports from unregistered providers. So in our work, we talked about four different types of services or supports. So there's things like consumables, so, you know, basic pieces of kind of equipment and medical supplies and assistive technologies. And people said, well, you know, we get these from unregistered providers. We get exactly the same product. There's no difference in the quality, but often the difference is in terms of the cost. We can get them cheaper if we go to unregistered providers. So people talked about the, you know, when you go and you buy something for a wedding and it's got a wedding tag on, it's, you know, 20% more expensive than a general product is. It's often the same for in the disability space as well. So people said, I go with unregistered providers because it costs me less, but, you know, there's no difference in quality.
I call that the disability tax.
Yeah.
Because if you buy something and it's a disability product, you're right, suddenly it's a lot more expensive.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's not the only tax we see around.
A lot of when Albert started selling wheelchairs, you know, it was the same product, but suddenly it was a lot cheaper.
Yeah, that's right. And I remember one of the earliest projects I did around the NDIS, somebody told me that they'd wanted to get a kettle tipper to stop them from, you know, pouring hot water on themselves, and they found one at Aldi for $30, whereas it was, you know, $200 through the provider, and they weren't allowed to just go and buy it through their NDIS funds. So so that's the first kind of category. Then there's things like household services, so things like cleaning and gardening services, and people said, again, I mean, that's not a disability specific service. You know, you know, I might be buying them because, you know, my disability means that I'm restricted in some of those things, but actually it's not specific to my disability. And so there's not kind of any different risk there. And I'll, also what I can do is use local and small businesses. So, you know, and then I feel more connected to the community, and I'm happy, you know, supporting local businesses. And then we've got things like allied health and other kind of therapies, so, you know, physiotherapy and things like that. And they might not be registered with the NDIS, but they're all registered with their professional bodies and accredited to that. So actually there we find that registration isn't a kind of anything to do with quality, or doesn't give an additional kind of quality or safety marker. I think most of the debate today has probably been around the final category, which is around support workers. So where people either employ support workers directly or through by sole contractors or via online platforms. And I guess it's controversial because people are kind of within personal domestic context and delivering personal care. But again, people said to us, well, actually, if I go with an unregistered support worker, I've got more flexibility. I can choose the sorts of workers that I want. That's more consistent. I can set the wage rates and move away from some of the rules that you get around agencies and have more empowerment and control. And so overall, people told us they were really positive about their experiences of using unregistered providers, and said to us, really, it's about empowerment and it's about exercising choice and control, which, you know, is supposed to be fundamental to the NDIS. And so many people said to us, you know, I get better quality services through unregistered providers, and they're more cost effective, which is good for me in terms of my plan. It makes it go further, but it's also better for the taxpayers. And then some people, and maybe we'll get to this later in a bit more detail, told us, I have to use unregistered providers because I don't have any choice. What the NDIA calls thin markets, which is where we have markets that don't have either enough or the right types of providers to deliver services, are the reality in many places in the country. And this isn't just for people who live in rural or remote areas. There's also many people who live in inner city areas who can't find the types of providers or the types of services that they want. So they have no choice but to go to unregistered providers. And then I guess the final thing on this is, many people said to us they actively avoid purchasing services from registered providers. So a lot of people had bad experiences or felt that they were at more risk because they had to go through a gatekeeper within the providers, and that meant they didn't necessarily have a relationship with the worker, particularly support workers, on a person-to-person basis. People told us that registration isn't any guarantee of quality. Whenever people receive services, there's always going to be some level of risk involved. And actually, there's a certain amount of dignity of risk in allowing, you know, people who receive those services to work out what sort of risks or what sort of levels of quality they want to receive. And I think this focus on just thinking about providers and whether they're registered or not, it takes away the agency of individuals in that relationship to be the ones who really, I think, are co-regulating those services. It's not just for regulators to have a view on that. People who are receiving those services need to have a say in that as well.
Yeah, and indeed, isn't that the whole point of what the NDIS was meant to be about, that we have, you know, dignity of risk, that we can have choice and control and make decisions about what suits us. I feel quite strongly about that. Let me turn to you, Jared. You use unregistered providers. What's your experience?
So I moved to the Central Coast in a very quick situation. It was to do with my partner's family member who was passing away, and I had to move up here very quickly. My partner had a registered provider. But they went, one of the big things for them is they were able to support me when I needed support. So they couldn't find anyone to come out after 8 o'clock at night time. And they couldn't find anyone before 9 a.m. So that made it very hard for the first 3 months while I tried to find other alternatives, because although I like spending a lot of time in bed, there's also a problem when you need to go to the bathroom or you need to eat, or maybe you just don't want to go to bed at 7 o'clock.
Absolutely. You need support when you need it. Like, again, the NDIS is about what participants and people with disabilities want, not what, providers want or when they want to provide support. Yeah.
And it's also not value for money. Like, putting on a support worker for 2 hours from 6 to 7 p.m. is not value for money for me. If I go to bed, at 7 p.m., I miss out on community participation, work opportunities, all kinds of different reasons. So, that's why, like Helen said, the market is very thin, and in the suburbs, from where I come from anyway, I only found out the other day that all my providers are unregistered. I thought one of them was, but they're not. So every single one of my providers are unregistered.
So you started with a registered provider. They weren't providing what you needed them to provide, and therefore you turned to unregistered providers, and now you're getting your needs met. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. The majority of them were in my control. Absolutely. I think that's one of the good things. If you like control and you're a bit of a control freak, self-management is for you.
Indeed, as a fellow control freak. Nick, can I turn to you? Why do you use unregistered providers?
I'm regional. There just aren't enough registered providers here. The area that I live in, there are several towns that have no registered providers at all. But I'm also a disability advocate, so I know all the registered providers. So for me personally, I don't use any registered providers. I only use non-registered ones. For our two young adult kids, they've got, one is using one registered provider, the other's using two. But the majority are non-registered. We're finding they're cheaper. They're a lot more flexible. But we also directly employ two support workers. One has been with us for 8 years and the other one's been with us for 3 years. When I say direct employ, that means that we manage their superannuation, their tax and their insurances. We can arrange training for them. And that training's tailored to the needs of the person they're supporting a lot more than it would be with a registered provider. So we claim all of those costs. We claim the bookkeeping fees as well. And the support workers are also paid $42 an hour plus their superannuation. We've made them part-time employees, so they get leave entitlements as well. And it's saving our son's plan $30,000 a year. And he's getting much better quality support that's much more tailored to his needs.
I'm glad that you raised that direct employment, which is essentially what you're doing. And clearly, if people are directly employing their support workers, that's a really good arrangement, because ultimately you're responsible and you're going to make sure that that you need for it, and also that the workers need, and that, and you cut out the middle person. So you save the agency quite a bit of money in the process.
Quite a lot, yeah. And it's also meant that one of our support workers, prior to being employed with us on a part-time basis, he wasn't able to get a loan for a mortgage. He wasn't able to get a rental. And we live in an area where there's 100 to 200 people applying for each rental. But because he had that more, he was a permanent part-time employee rather than a casual employee as a support worker, he was able to secure a rental for his wife and his baby. So it's made a big difference that in that we're able to better look after our support workers. They're staying with us longer term, and it just works so much better for us. And they're clearly very happy with us, because we've retained one for 8 years and one has no intention of moving on. So it's win-win, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Have either of you had any bad experiences with unregistered providers?
I've also had far worse situations with service providers, with registered providers. Much, much more dangerous and much more traumatizing with a registered provider than with an unregistered provider. And I think the reason why that is, George, is because communication is so important when you are self-managing. And so when you are employing a support worker or a worker or engaging with an unregistered provider, because you're the one that has the control, it becomes organic, if you like, that your values and your needs are expressed in the beginning. And so when something bad happens, it usually can be handled quite quickly and efficiently. In my circumstance, I know that might be a privileged position because I have other workers to fall back on, and that's something you need to weigh up when you become self-managed, is that you're responsible for filling the shifts when they need to be filled. So I have had a few instances where support worker tried to claim more hours than what they worked, and I have a few things like that, but that compares in comparison to the instances with registered providers, where I was told on my birthday that my support worker forgot to come and there was no one available, and I had to stay in my wheelchair overnight from a registered provider. You can't compare the two of them.
Yeah, that's really unacceptable. You know, like you're saying, that you're going to have good and bad experiences regardless of whether your provider is registered and unregistered. What I also think is really interesting about what you're saying is that communication is key, and being able to communicate directly is actually quite useful.
Yeah, and I think Nick made the point that, or it might have been about the gatekeepers, like, if I need to go to the bathroom, I want to talk to the person that's going to help me go to the bathroom. I don't want to call somebody to find if they have four people available or whatever. I want to be able to say, are you available? Yes or no? Okay. And then move on. But yeah, communication, like any business and personal relationship, if you don't have good communication, things break down pretty quickly.
Absolutely. Nick, I'm interested in your experience around any advice that you might want to give people who are, you know, might be a bit nervous about going from a registered to an unregistered provider. Do you have any sort of advice?
Yeah, word of mouth is really good. Find out from other people with disability and their families who's good, who are the people to avoid. Join some of the peer support groups on Facebook or in the community. That's all really helpful. You want to check for things like, depending on what sort of role they're doing. So if it's a therapist, check that they have a Medicare registration or that they're registered with APRA. If you're talking about a cleaner or a gardener, get on your local community Facebook group and ask for recommendations, but don't choose a recommendation from just one person. Choose someone who's been recommended by a bunch of people. If it's a support worker, get your word of mouth, interview them. You know, for our son, a lot of people talk to me. They don't talk to him. So if they talk to me instead of him, they're not the right person. They're gone. So that's something that's really important to us, is what their values are like, because everything else can be learned, you know. But you want to check that they've got first aid, that they've got a current driver's license, that they've got a working with children check, or whatever it is in your relevant state. And also checking a national police clearance. You can also check whether they've got a NDIS worker screening check. I don't know what it's like in other states, but in WA, that costs more than the working with children check and the national police clearance together.
It does concern me that the government's trying to make money out of worker screening. Like, it should be free. I mean, we're talking about safety, and we're also talking about workers who, you know, we need more workers in the industry. Don't make it hard for them to get the necessary checks. So if you're listening, Bill Shorten, sort that one out, please. I know that you listen, so.
Just on the NDIS worker screening check, it's also, you just go on a database. So there's no card, there's nothing to show that you've been approved. So, you know, the self-manager has to sign up for to access the database as well to check whether that person's got the screening check. So maybe a card. If you're going to pay almost $150, maybe a card to go with it to prove that you've been screened.
Now, some of the registered providers, and not all of them, just a small group, they say it's unfair, and they say that we should all have to use them because, you know, they're essentially meeting all these extra requirements, and they think that we should all use them. What are your thoughts? What would happen, and what would be the consequences for you if the government agreed with them and decided that we would only be allowed to use registered providers and that they banned us from using unregistered ones? Can I start with you, Nick?
Well, it would be a disaster for everybody in regional and remote Australia. Like I said before, there are towns with not a single registered provider. So essentially you do without support. Even where there is a registered provider or a couple of registered providers, the wait lists here are huge. We're talking about 6 months to 12 months to 2 years, sorry, wait list to access services in our region. So if everyone has to then join the same small number of registered providers, that queue just blows out astronomically. So it would be a major problem, and we're going to have more people experiencing what Jared did of spending the night in your wheelchair. You know, it would be horrendous. Please don't do it, Mr. Shorten.
So this idea that as a registered service provider is somehow clean and safe and polite and will attend to all of your needs, and that unregistered providers are your dodgy neighbour that might abuse you in the middle of the night, is absolutely just a load of shit. It's not accurate, and I'm hoping in the future if the government keeps talking about putting people back into the NDIS, and I think they mean disabled people, that these experiences and knowledge pools will shed some light that registered providers are not clean and shiny, and unregistered providers are not dodgy and corrupt.
Absolutely, it's important to recognise that people need choice, and I think that we need both registered and unregistered. Helen, your report was fantastic. I recommend everyone reads it. It focused a lot in the recommendations around capacity building, and capacity building of both people with disabilities and of unregistered providers. Why is this really important?
Well, in thinking about what we do about this situation where we know that people aren't always safe in services, and not agreeing that registration was the answer, we start to think about, well, what else could happen to try and address some of those issues? And it's always struck me as really odd that, you know, NDIS participants, you come into the scheme because you've got a permanent and significant disability, and that it's fairly likely that you're going to need support over a number of years. And yet when we look at thinking about how we think about safety and things like that, we just tend to think about the providers and not about the huge resource that people with disability at the centre of that are. And so our suggestion is that if we could think about capacity building with people with disability a bit more, to say, you know, what do you expect in terms of services? What does a service that's unsafe or that doesn't feel right for you, what might that look like? And what do you do about it if you find yourself in that situation? And regardless of whether you use registered or unregistered providers, and like Nick's family, you know, often people use a combination of both of them. Or as Jared says, you know, you don't even know if you've got registered providers or not because you've never thought about that issue. You know, that's going to produce kind of better outcomes for people, because you've got people better equipped to navigate the system, to know what they should expect and how to speak out. I think it's really important that we can't forget there's a bunch of people in the NDIS now who were in other service systems before, for sometimes decades, who did not receive always quality services. I mean, that was, you know, we saw all of the stuff before the NDIS about why we needed the NDIS, because services weren't meeting people's needs and expectations. And there's a big culture shift for both providers and for people using those services in the system. And so I think to do a bit more work around capacity building with people, to say, this is what you should be getting in terms of a service. If you don't feel right about these things, these are some of the avenues that you go down and some of the things that you should do. Some of the recommendations around unregistered providers were around just, you know, some of the things about how you, you know, how you approach services, the sorts of things that you need in place around superannuation and you know, insurances and things like that. But to me, that's kind of a more minor point of it. And I think really focusing on NDIS participants is where we need to look at this.
Yeah, you're spot on there. And I think that we need to recognize that this kind of support and capacity building is peer support, and that yeah, people can really benefit from having access to peer mentoring, and clearly, you know, that's an area that's underfunded in our country. So, Bill, if you're listening, so Helen, did I say something?
I was just going to say, I mean, obviously we've seen some of those sorts of projects around the ILC fund, you know, with the NDIS, but I guess one of the challenges in my experience of many of them is they're quite short-lived. By the time they're up and running, they're thinking about whether they're having to wrap up or bid for some more money. So it would be really nice if we could think about how we use some of that stream of funding to do some of that work to support this space as well.
Yeah, ongoing reliable funding is really important. So I'm really glad that we had this discussion, and you know, I think one of the take-home messages is that we need to recognize that it's hard to find workers out there in the sector, and there's a lot of really critical needs that are not going to be met if we start reducing people's options and choices. And so I think the message is really that registered, unregistered, we need both types, and we need to build people's capacity to access the support that suit us the best. Any other final thoughts?
We also need disabled support workers. We need people with disabilities working as support workers.
Nick?
I would like to emphasise what Helen said about more investment in ILC and supporting disabled persons organisations and peer support organisations to support people in this area. But I also think that rather than requiring providers become NDIS registered, NDIA and the LIC Partners in Community and the ECA coordinators, they have a role to play as well. They should be contacting participants and nominees to check in, to make sure regularly, to make sure that, you know, that we're safe, we feel safe in our homes, that we're safe when we're using our support services, that we can access the supports that we need, that we understand our rights, and that our providers are appropriately supporting us and charging us correctly as well, because there is a lot of overcharging going on. But also that we know how to complain about providers and have access to support to do that if we need to. You know, there's lots of people in this area that have not heard from anyone at NDIS for 2 to 3 years, and that's really not okay. Now, I honestly feel that would be a much better way of ensuring people are safe and that they're getting the quality services that they need, is to keep checking in and making sure and hear from them.
Yeah, and I think that you just reminded us that Anne-Marie Smith, and the tragic situation there, that was a registered provider. Sorry to leave it on such a sad note, but I think that we do need to recognise that there's been a lot of abuse and violence that's gone on. And yeah, the way to solve that is really a lot more complicated than saying that we all need to use registered providers. And in fact, that'll only make it worse. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Helen. Thank you, Jared, for your time. And I really enjoyed our discussion.
Thanks, George.
That's all we have time for on today's episode of Visual and Necessary. To be notified of future episodes, don't forget to hit the subscribe button and the notification bell. Thank you to our podcast partner for this episode, the University of New South Wales. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay well and reasonable.